Hey, church, hopefully you're having a great start to your week today. No better place to be in than church, all right? That's cool. Hey, it was a few weeks ago, Kate and I, we're heading to Wisconsin for a family wedding in her family. And as we were going, we're on the turnpike, we're about 2 hours away, and all these, like the dashboard light starts dinging. You get what I'm saying? You ever have that where you're like, okay, all right, that's probably nothing. You know, most on all my vehicles, you know, the check engine light's always on. So I'm like, oh, that's normal. All right, we're good. But then the battery light came on. And it starts dinging at me, and I'm like, okay, don't know what that's about. Then all these lights start dinging. And I realize that as we're driving, that it starts, like, to lose power. And I'm like, uh-oh. All right, that's not good. Okay, and as we were going, the windshield is like the final thing. The windshield wipers, they started going on and off. It was like the Jeep was waving goodbye to me, and it shut off, and it wouldn't turn back on. And as we coasted there to a stop, we stop, and I'm like, you know, I do what any man would do. You know, I get out of the car, I go open up the hood, and I just kind of look around. You know, I'm like, all right. Looks normal to me. I can't see anything that's wrong in here. And I'm looking there, and it's on a Friday evening. It's about 4:30 in the afternoon on a Friday. And everything's closing, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do. You know, like I don't know where we're going to go. How are we going to get to where we need to go? You know, we need to be in Chicago that night. And we're in a problem. Now, I was thinking about it this week as I was looking back a few weeks ago, is that our relationships are kind of like a car, in a sense. Work with me here, okay? It's easy to start a car, okay? We can all get past that phase, right? It's easy to start friendships. In fact, a lot of our friendships, not necessarily our deep ones, those ones we understand take time, but a lot of our friendships, you know, we just kind of stumble into them because we meet somebody, we like the same things, we do the same things, or whatever that might be, and so it's easy for us to start them sometimes. It's easy for us to have a car, okay, sit in our driveway. That doesn't take really anything, and so same thing with us in relationships. It's easy for us to have friendships, you know, like, oh yeah, we're friends, we're cool with each other, all right, that's cool, I like this person, and so that's easy. It's easy to drive a car for the most part. I know some people struggle with that, but for the most of us, all right, it's easy to drive a car, especially when everything is working right. Same thing with our relationships. It's easy for our relationships to progress and to move to where they need to go as long as everybody's on their best behavior. But when something goes wrong, many of us, if not most of us, we just don't know what to do. Right? When something needs to be fixed, we don't know how to fix it. And the problem within relationships for us is that things have gone wrong in every single one of our close, real, deep friendships. Right? That's just part of it. We got to work through that stuff. And if you're truly honest with yourself, you'll realize that, man, our relationships and our friendships that we have with the people around us, man, they are messy. All right? They have problems. Like, things go wrong. And it happens often. Now, when we try to do everything, and it happens even when we try to do everything right. Like, even when we're nice to everybody and, you know, we keep our lawn mowed and we do all the right things that a good citizen should do. And we live by the golden rule. Like, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Live by the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Like, all of that, if we just do that, all of that works great until somebody decides to be a jerk. You know, that's when things go down. That's when things become unraveled. And many times for us, if you know, you think about any fight that you've ever been in, many times it's simply just a disagreement. Like, they see things their way and I see things the right way. You get what I'm saying? We all feel that way. All right, we think to ourselves when that happens, we think it's like, man, if they just see things my way, All right, if they would just see things the right way, everything would be okay. All right, other times people are just like for honest with ourselves, like people could just be mean. Okay, and for us, it's like for no apparent reason. We're like, I don't know, this person hates me. I don't understand. Like, this person at work, you know, it drives me crazy, but they don't like me. And we get offended by people, and we get hurt when people are mean to us, when people do wrong to us. And that's the thing, is that when somebody wrongs us, when someone does something wrong to us, which happens inevitably because none of the people that we're friends with, unfortunately, are perfect, our initial moves are almost always the wrong moves, right? Almost 100% of the time, our initial moves are almost always the wrong moves. Because think about it, what's usually our natural reaction? When people wrong us, when people do wrong to us, what's usually our natural reaction? Well, some of us, what we try to do is we try to just pretend like it didn't happen, right? We just try to pretend like the situation, like what they did to us, it never happened. Yeah, it still bothers us. Yeah, it still hurts us. Yeah, we still think about it. We still have those little conversations in our head. We're like, man, if they would say this, I would next time I'm going to, if I had the perfect situation, I would say that and I would really get them. And there's always a crowd, you know, in our minds when we're doing that, going, yeah, you're right. And so we think to ourselves, you know, we think, hey, if I just pretend like it didn't happen, like it would all go away, and that never works. All right, same thing like with our car, with Kate and I, as we're broke down on the side of the road, like in the Jeep. Like, I can't just pretend like it's not broke down. You know, like that doesn't get us anywhere. Like, I can't just sit there in the seat and be like, and not move, okay, with the car off. Like, that doesn't fix anything. That's weird, okay? That's what that is. All right, it doesn't fix your problem. All right, others of us, we don't necessarily just pretend. It's that we just completely ignore that person, all right? Like, it's just a complete, I'm just going to pretend like you don't exist, all right? This is where we feel like when we're like, I'm done with the relationship, I'm done with this, like, you know, I'm done with you, I don't want anything to do with you, and we just kind of erase them, in a sense, from our life. But that doesn't fix anything either. Same thing with being on the side of the road in the Jeep. Like, I can't just ignore the situation. Like, I totally understand. I'm not pretending because I understand what's going on here. And I'm just like, but I don't feel like doing it. I don't feel like fixing this problem. And so I don't. Like, that doesn't, you know, that's not really an option because we're not, it doesn't get us moving. It doesn't fix the situation that kind of has us stuck. Others of us, what we do, and this is what we all feel like on the inside, we all have this inclination within us, is we want to get even or we want payback. And we talked a little bit about this last week when we talked about forgiveness. Forgiveness, or really, let me say this, when people do wrong to us, and when we have a friend or a family member or whoever it might be, when they do something wrong to us, even we feel this way, and even the Bible kind of confirms this, saying, hey, it's this idea that they owe you. This is why we say things like, you owe me an apology, or you owe that person an apology, is because it's like, you wronged me, and so now you owe me. And so it's within us, we want them to pay us back. That's why we call it payback. We want them to make it even. But even that, when we pursue that, that never works. In fact, that always progresses things. It always makes things worse in our life or worse within the relationship. And so what we end up doing when we do that is like we change the golden rule, okay, to do unto others as they have done unto you. And for some reason within us, that just feels right. See, that's our initial, like, reaction. Our initial moves are almost always the wrong moves. Very rarely do we do the right thing, which is to initiate fixing the problem. We don't do that on our own, even though we're always part of the problem. And even though, as we talked about last week, how all of us, when we're in a situation with somebody, we're in a fight or whatever you want to call it, we, in our minds, we're always the most mature one in the relationship within the problem. And so one of the reasons why we have these broken relationships in our life, whether whoever it might be with, whether it's your ex or in-laws or your boss or your friend or neighbor, or maybe it's your sister or your coworker, whatever it is, it always stems from one thing. If we want to dig down to really what the problem is this stems. It always stems from this one thing, and it's called selfishness. Okay. And if you're sitting there and you're in a fight with one of your friends right now, or your mom, or you know whoever family member, whoever it might be, coworker, and you're like, yeah, for sure it does. All right, it's their selfishness. I'm glad you pointed that out, Zach. All right, that makes it way easy. That's it. The light just came on. You're like, yeah, they're so selfish. They're always about themselves. All right, it's always about them. And it's true. All right, it is their selfishness. But it's also selfishness on our part. All right, and selfishness on our part is actually the thing that we can control because we can't control the other person. But the selfishness on our part, that is actually the relationship killer that's in our life. Now, the Bible has a lot to say about relationships and friendships with others, and God gives us the blueprint of how to have good, this is what we all want, how to have good, meaningful, deep, successful relationships, and the Bible tells us, kind of gives us a blueprint of how to fix those relationships when things go wrong, which they will, because we are all broken, messed up, jacked up, horrible, terrible people, okay? Like, that's just the truth. Now, one time Paul, he wrote to a brand new church in this huge city called Philippi, and this church was going through a lot. Like, these people, they're going through a lot. They had their relationships and their friendships were being challenged, like, on a daily basis, and this is what Paul tells them. He says, hey, this is what you got to do. He says, make my joy complete, meaning, hey, you want to make me happy, all right, you want to you want to make God happy, all right, this is what you got to do. He says, make my joy complete by thinking the same way, having the same love, united in spirit, and intent on one purpose. Basically, it's this idea that Paul's trying to get us to understand. Is he's saying, hey, God loves it. Like, he absolutely loves it when we get along with each other. God loves it when we get along with each other. Now, if we're a parent in here or if we've been a parent, all right, we kind of understand how God feels a little bit, right? Because we totally have the same feeling. You know, we love it when our kids get along, don't we? Okay, some people aren't so sure, right? You're like, no, I love when my kids are fighting, you know, and whining and screaming and squealing and ugh, you know, all that stuff. Okay, we love it when our kids do these things. We love it when our kids think the same way. And have love for each other, all right, that's always good. And are united together in spirit and work together to do whatever they're doing. We love it when our kids get along with each other. The only issue is that it just usually doesn't last long. Like, we see it, little snippets here and there, but it doesn't last long. Like, in our home, I'm just saying, especially with our with my two boys, all right, like they get along sometimes, I think, you know. But you know, sometimes it could be like a war zone. All right, in our house, and that's just how it is. And moms, you totally get it when the squealing goes away and they start screaming at each other and beating each other up and stuff like that. Isn't it nice when you're just like, you get that 5 minutes of, and you're just like, ah, peace, right? Don't you like that? Right? You like that feeling, moms? Okay, I think God has that same feeling when we get along. Now, some of you guys, I get you don't have kids yet. But you were a kid once, and so you totally understand what this was. Can you think way back, all right, to when you were a kid? Some of you guys are kids, so this won't be hard for you. But think back to, like, I think the easiest example of this is, like, the road trip, you know, like, you're with your family. Now, usually, it's not 100%, but let's just say usually, the front seat, there's peace, right? They got the best air conditioning. They got control of the radio, all right? They got, you know, usually they got windows all around. Like that's where there's peace, right? You get past the captain's seats, and what do you have? The kids in the war zone, okay? You remember how that was? All right, where it was just like a war zone behind there. The alliances, the teams, the strategies, everything that kind of went into all that. Remember that, how that was? It's funny because and I do the same thing once in a while, but like when we were fighting, when I was a kid, me and my sisters, you know, my dad, he would swing his arm around and he'd start swatting around. He didn't even care if he's hitting the right kid or not. You know, it's just like, stop that. You know, that's how it is. And we love it when our kids get along. And God loves it when we get along. See, a lot of us, is, you know, think back to the days in the back seat. Like, a lot of us have carried that thinking, all right, into our adult life where you know who you are because everywhere you go, it seems like drama seems to follow, all right? And that's an issue. That's not community. That's not how relationships and friendships are supposed to work. We are supposed to think of the same way, think the same way. We're supposed to have love for each other. We're supposed to be united in each other, and we are supposed to work together. And I feel like a lot of us, we understand the concept of community and togetherness. We understand what Paul's trying to say here. Like, we get it. Team needs to work together. We totally understand that. The problem is, all right, we get it. We just don't always do it. And there's a variety of reasons why we don't. But every single one of those reasons, it stems from your selfishness, our selfishness. See, we have the tendency to not be in community. We have the tendency to want to do our own thing. We have the tendency to walk away from our friendships. That's human nature, right? We have the tendency to give up on our friendships. And so the question is, how do we not do that? All right, the question is, how do we beat that in our life? The question is, how do we get along with each other? And Paul, he actually answers that in the next verse. And actually, what he does is he actually lists a few things. He says, all right, this is what you got to do, all right? Here's the secret ingredients. You want to know how to get along with everybody? Okay, that's good. All right, one guy, appreciate that, okay? He's got issues, but he's not afraid to say it. I like it, all right? This is what he says to do, okay? He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition. Now, what the heck does that mean? Do nothing out of selfishness. Do nothing out of selfish ambition. The best way I think it is to explain this is he's saying, refuse to compete. All right? Refuse to compete. Now, I'm all for friendly competition, okay? I'm just saying, I'm a dude, all right? So this is what dudes do. When you get a bunch of dudes together, all right, even if it's like you only have a rock, I can throw that farther than you, you know, it's all that stuff, all right? That's what we do, all right? Like whatever I'm doing when I'm with my guy friends, it's like, you know, it turns into a competition and I'm totally in it to win it. And I don't think that's bad. That's not necessarily what he's talking about here. Friendly competition is fine. The problem is, all right, when we think down deep, most of our competition is not just friendly competition with our friends, all right? Most of our competition with relationships and with friends, all right, is actually in our mind, and it's not friendly, all right? We want to put others down so we can kind of lift ourselves up, and that's what we do. See, any family is brought down when mom and dad compete with each other every single time. And by the way, aren't kids good at putting mom up against dad? Like, they're like experts at it. And they're not even trying to hide it. They're just like, well, mom said, you know, it's like that type of thing, right? Anytime mom and dad compete with each other, you are going to have problems. Anytime a husband and wife competes with each other, you're going to have issues. Anytime sisters compete with each other, right, your relationships are going to suffer. Anytime coworkers have rivalry, right, you know, in the workplace, right, there is going to be problems at your job and drama. All right, anytime the church members compete with each other, you're going to have big problems. See, here's the thing. Every single one of us, we are all in the same boat in the fact that we want deep, meaningful relationships and friendships. And here's what God's saying. He's saying the secret to that is you choose not to compete with each other. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit. All right, now, none of us here, I think when we see this word conceit, none of us view ourselves as conceited. I don't know why that is. It's just like, that sounds like really bad. Like, yeah, I'm prideful, which by the way, conceit, pride, same thing. You know, like, yeah, I got some pride in my life. Like, we're not afraid of that. But like conceited, that's like a whole other level to us. I don't know. Again, I don't know why. None of us walk around and say, hey, you know, hey, what's your name? Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, my name's Zach. And I just want to let you know up front, like, I'm just super conceited. Okay. Like, nobody does that. All right, at least I hope, I don't think you do. But here's the deal. We all have pride in our life. And he's saying, don't do anything out of pride. Now, think about that. There are a lot of things that we do in life. If not, maybe most of the things that we do in life. If you think about it, that is all based off of our pride. And our selfishness is all based off what's best for us. I mean, a lot of us, we scroll through the social media and we're constantly comparing ourselves to others. Why? Because of the pride in our life. We want to compete with each other. It's just kind of how our brains are wired, and it is not good for us. Some of us, we're just really slick about it, okay? What we do is we try to wrap up our, like, pride up in a nice, you know, nice wrapping, but inside is super messed up. Like, we take shots at each other, just like little ones. Right, that people don't really even notice, then we hide our pride. We're good at hiding our pride, some of us. It's things like, hey, we'll talk to somebody else. We're like, hey, did you hear so-and-so? You know, they got a new car. Man, that's a nice car. It's all good. But then we're like, man, you know, it's a lot of debt. See what we do? All right, we take these little cheap shots at each other. Or, hey, did you hear that so-and-so got that promotion? Man, okay, that's really good for them. Yeah, they got that promotion. You know, that's going to be good. But, man, It's a lot of hours. It's going to take away from their family. I don't know. Or, hey, I really, really, really like so-and-so, but hey, did you see their kids? Man, their kids are out of control. Did you notice that? That's probably what you guys say about my family, okay? Don't do that. I don't like that. See what we do? All right, we try to bring others down, and when we bring others down, we actually elevate ourselves up. What are the odds? All right, that's what we do. It's like we push off each other, and we compete with each other in this way, all right? And this destroys our friendships and our relationships. And so he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition, all right? Never, ever, ever should a true Christian, is what he's saying, all right, should we be motivated by what's best for us, by our selfish ambition. He's saying refuse to compete and do nothing out of our pride, but instead, he contrasts it here. He says, but instead, in humility, consider others as more important than yourselves. How good are you at that? Just throwing that out there. He says everyone should not look to his own interests, but rather to the interests of others. See, this word humility, I think some of us, we kind of got the wrong idea on it. Humility is not viewing yourself as worth less than others, okay? It's not what humility is. Humility is not low self-esteem. That doesn't mean you walk around and you're like, oh man, feel bad for me. Look how terrible my life is. That's not what humility is. In fact, it's really not thinking about yourself at all. That's what humility is. And so basically, what Paul's saying here is he's saying, hey, whenever you are around people, whether you know them or not, whether you respect them or not, whether you have a great relationship with them or not, he says you need to act as if everyone, all of them, are more important than you. Okay? Right? You need to act as if everybody is more important than you, meaning when you walk into a room, right, your idea, your mindset is that everyone else is more important than you. So you walk into church here, you look around at all these people, right? Your mindset should be that everybody here is more important than you. You walk into your house, okay, after a long day of frustrating work, whatever may have happened, and you walk in, you need to have this mindset that everybody in your house is actually more important than you. When you go to work and you got that annoying guy who actually made yesterday so frustrating, okay, you know that guy, right? You go into work and you see him again, or you have to deal with him again. As soon as you step into the building, it's hey, every single person here, including that guy, I need to act as if they are more important than me. When you go to school, all right, it's everybody in your class, your professor, even those people that you cannot stand, all right, that you need to act as if everybody is more important than you. When you get in the car after church here, all right, this is getting real now, we're getting close, okay? In 30 minutes or so, when you jump in that car and you drive out and, you know, you're in the line to get out, you know, you need to act as if everybody in your car and all the cars around you are more important than you. This is an attitude. It's a mindset. It's not a feeling, all right? So if you're going to be like, well, I'll do that when I feel the feeling coming, like I'm waiting for the feeling of that. Well, that's not ever going to come, all right? Because we're not ever prone to do that. Our natural heart, like our mind's not going to just do that on its own because we're completely selfish. You have to choose to do it. And so that means no more secretly hoping that they fail. That means no more thinking, oh, well, what they did to me, that was on them. That wasn't my fault. All right, it actually doesn't even matter if it was your fault or whose fault it was or who did whatever first. That doesn't matter. All right, he doesn't give a caveat for that. That means that there's no more thinking, oh, I don't care. All right, well, I'm done with that person. I'm giving up on that relationship. All right, no. It's actually your job to care. You have to care because you're acting as if they are more important than you. See, it's an attitude, it's a mindset that we are to have, and it's the same attitude and mindset that Jesus had. And so he says, you need to adopt that attitude, right? You need to adopt that mindset as that of Jesus. Jesus had it, and so you need to have it. In fact, some translations, they actually make this even more clear. They say, in your relationships with one another, you need to adopt the same attitude as that of Jesus, right? They give you the context of it. See, Paul's saying, I want you to approach relationships the way that Jesus approached relationships, which is a problem for us because Jesus was always the one who was wronged. You get what I'm saying? All right? Jesus was always the one who was the offended. Right? He was always one that was treated wrongly. It was always Jesus, like every single time, which actually maybe that's not so much different for us because that's how we feel like every single time, you know, that we are in a situation with somebody else, right? We're the ones that always feel wrong. And yeah, we did something back, but it wasn't that bad, and what they did was way worse, and so it's just not that big of a deal. After all, anybody would do what I did. You know, that's kind of what we think. Jesus was always the one who was wronged against, and Jesus was always the one to initiate fixing that broken relationship. That's the way that Jesus approached broken relationships in his life. In fact, Jesus would say crazy stuff. Like crazy stuff. Like Jesus would say, like one time he said, hey, picture this. He's talking about like relationships with us and him and us. And he's like, it's almost like I'm like a shepherd and I got like 100 sheep. And one of my little sheep just like leaves and wanders off. And when that happens, our relationship is like completely broken. Right? Just wanders away from me. I don't know why. There's no good reason for it. And Jesus says, but I'm like a good shepherd. And so I leave the 99 and I go after that one. And I search and search and search until I bring it back. Now the way we do it, okay, is a little different. Okay, the way we do it and the way we approach relationships naturally is we're like, if one sheep wanders off, what do we think? We're like, man, that's some rogue sheep wandering off. No good reason. Why'd they do that? That makes no sense. And if that sheep would just, you know, and we think to ourselves, if that sheep would like to rejoin the rest of us, all right, we'll be here. We're not hard to find. We're not going anywhere. There's 99 of us just chilling right here. So that sheep is welcome to come back once they get their act together, you know, at any time. We'll do the right thing. We'll welcome them back like we know Jesus would want us to do. And we think to ourselves, we're like, well, I don't need another project or I don't have time to go looking for it. And we think, and it's true. We're like, and that's on them anyway. They wandered off. We didn't move. I didn't do anything wrong. That's not on me. See, that's how we think. The only problem is that's just not how Jesus handled broken relationships. Ever. See, we don't see people the way God sees people. That's our problem. We see people through the lens of what they've done to me, which if you think about it, is all about me. It's selfish. Jesus thankfully did not do that. Instead, you know what he did? Paul says, instead of acting like us, he says, Jesus, existing in the form of God, because he is God, did not consider equality with God as something to be exploited. Meaning, here's Jesus. He's like up in heaven. He's doing his thing, sitting on his throne. And he's got, you know, angels that are screaming to him and praising him and worshiping him 24/7. And he's perfectly holy. And he's God. And he's doing his thing. But he had all this power and all this glory. But he did not view it as something to make him better. He did not exploit it for himself. Instead, you know what he did? This is crazy. He emptied himself of that power. How? By assuming the form of a servant. Something none of us want to be. None of us want to be the servant in our friendship, right? He says, taking on the likeness of humanity, and when he had come as a man, he humbled himself. This is God of the universe dealing with his puny creation. That's us, by the way. He says, what's he do? He humbled himself by becoming our servant. What? By becoming obedient to the point of death, Paul says. Even like the worst death ever. Even death on a cross. See, that's what God was willing to do to fix our broken relationships with him. And we talked about this a little bit last week where when somebody wrongs us and we choose to forgive them, which is a choice, it's not a feeling, remember? Remember we talked about last week that it always costs us something. Right? It's a debt that they owe us and we forgive that debt. That's what true forgiveness is. And that's what he did to us. This costs him. And how much more should we be willing to fix the broken relationships that we have in our life, if he was willing to come fix our relationship with him? See, in another letter to a brand new church in another city, this huge city called Rome, we've all heard of Rome, Paul, he writes this. He says, this is what I want you to do. And this church was struggling with their relationships as well, just like we all are, right? They're normal people. He says, this is what I want you to do. I want you to love one another deeply as brothers and sisters, all right? That's, and we know that. We're like, oh, yeah, he's telling us to love each other. That's what we tell our kids. That's what we know. We've heard that from since we were like a little kid. He says, and I want you to take the lead. And we're like, whoa, 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 take the lead. We're supposed to take the lead on repairing our broken relationships. We're supposed to take the lead on restoring our broken friendships. And we think to ourselves, we're like, Zach, it feels like you're putting all the responsibility on me. All right, like why is that on me? Why not them? And I would say, actually, it sure looks like Paul is putting all the responsibility on all of us, unfortunately. Well, Zach, you don't know how I feel. You don't know how I feel. You don't know my situation. Like, my situation is just different. You don't know what they did to me. And I get that we all feel that way, but it doesn't sound like it really matters what the situation is. And just to throw this on there, is that Paul, he doesn't even know these people that he's writing to. He had never been to Rome. He had never met these people. He doesn't know them, just like he doesn't know us. Yet, here he is. He's saying, hey, doesn't really matter the situation that you're in. Doesn't really matter the fight that you've had. He's saying, I want you to take the lead in fixing the relationship. Like, is that just it? Nah, it's actually worse than that. And it's actually harder than that. He says, we are to take the lead in restoring our relationships by honoring one another. Well, what's that mean? Honor? But what if I don't like them? What if we don't get along? What if they're not very honorable, right? Like you expect me, like God expects me to honor somebody who doesn't deserve to be honored? Isn't that something that's supposed to be kind of like earned? Well, no, it's not what he says. He doesn't say honor them, take the lead in honoring them if they deserve it, which nobody does, okay? Or if they say they're sorry, then okay, then you're good. Or if they ask you for forgiveness or they make it right somehow, right? That's not what he says. He says, no, take the lead in honoring one another. It doesn't matter what they've done. And even if they're not honorable, in fact, if you think about that, if they don't deserve it, the more they don't deserve it, the more effort to fix the relationship will actually be even more apparent in their life. They should notice it easier. In fact, a few sentences later, he says, and by the way, do not repay anyone evil for evil. We've heard that before. And give careful thought to what to do, what is honorable. Here's that word again, in everyone's eyes. And if possible, as far as it depends on you, he says, live in peace with everyone. By the way, who's everyone? Does that include that guy that you cannot stand at work? Dang it, it does, doesn't it? Wish it doesn't. Mike? No, just kidding. It's not Mike. It's Noah. No, I'm just kidding. Not him either. All right? Live at peace with everyone. That means that person that wronged you so long ago in such a horrible way, they're in everyone. That means that person at work that's always like there's some rivalry there that's always like trying to push you down. It's everyone. That means the people that you cannot stand, that means your mom or your dad, you know, it includes everyone, right? Meaning we are to do everything that you can do to remove any obstacles in fixing the relationship that you might have. And by the way, that doesn't guarantee a fixed relationship. It doesn't guarantee a fixed friendship, okay? That doesn't mean you're going to get a dad back because some of it is on the other person. That's the part we always focus on. But as far as it depends on you, he's saying, as far as it depends on you, you are to honor them every chance that you get. And if you start honoring that person, everything that comes out of your mouth, that means everything that comes out of your mouth about them, it builds them up. That's what honoring them is. That means you respect them. Doesn't mean you have to like them. Doesn't mean you have to approve the way that they live their life or what they do. All right, but that means you build them up. Everything that comes out of your mouth, it to them, it builds them up, and about them, to other people, it's all about building them up. What I've noticed is that it seems like 95% of the time, most of the time by far, when you start honoring somebody that you are in conflict with, right, usually that fixes the situation, and not just fixes it, it actually fixes it relatively quickly. See, we appreciate being honored. We notice that. When people honor us, that's something that sticks out to us, especially when we don't deserve it. We love it when people talk good about us. I haven't hidden this fact from you. I've talked about it before, is that my Friday thing, I'm sitting here, I'm working on my message here at church, and for lunch, I always go to Burger King, okay? The main reason for that is not because they have the best food, all right? The main reason for that is because they're the cheapest, okay? And I got these coupons, and I can make it, I can make my money last. And so that's what I do. And you know what I like about Burger King besides the cheapness of it, okay, which I really appreciate? The thing I also like about Burger King is when I go up to the window and they hand me my food, you know what they tell me? They say, "Hey, you rule." And I'm like, "Thank you. I do, don't I? I appreciate that. I like that." See, we all enjoy being honored. It feels good to be honored. And we are to honor each other. All right, that's what we are to do. That's how you live in humility, right, in your relationships and in your friendships. And that's how you live with humility to repair those and maintain those relationships and those friendships in your life. But it takes work. And it's hard because it's against like every inclination in our body. It's kind of like Kate and I sitting on the side of the road, right, as we're sitting in the Jeep. See, as a Christian, putting in the work is really your only option moving forward. Like, you got to figure something out. Staying put is not an option. And so on that day, a few weeks ago, I called a tow company. They came out. They towed us. I actually called around to some, you know, repair shops. I'm like, "Hey, I don't quite know what the problem is." And they're all like, "Nah, we're leaving for the weekend. Bring it in on, like, next Thursday." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, that's not going to work." And so I had the tow truck. I had them tow us to the only place where I had any sort of hope, and that was to AutoZone, okay? I'm like, "Well, if I get to AutoZone, at least maybe I can figure something out, and if I need to fix it, maybe I can fix it on my own. I don't know." And I didn't know what was wrong, and I had some ideas, all right? My idea was, I thought maybe this was the alternator. If you don't know what that is, all right, that's the thing that charges the battery when your engine is running. And so we get there, and what I didn't know is that they had, like, some tools, like, check some of this stuff, which I was like, awesome. And so they go, and first they check my battery, and they're like, your battery's wasted. Like, it's done. And I'm like, they said, "Your battery's bad." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, because the alternator's bad, like, I think." And so they're like, "No, I think pretty sure it's your battery." And so I go, and I buy a new battery. I'm like, maybe that'd be an easier, cheaper fix. And so we put the battery in, but the battery light on my dash was still on. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, "You're good to go." I'm like, "I don't think so, because what's going to happen is I'm going to drive an hour down the road. The battery's going to run out. And then I'm going to be in the same position only later, and everything really will be closed at that point." So I'm like, "I'm going to buy, you know, I want to buy an alternator." And they looked it up, and they had one left. So I'm like, "I'll take that." And I had to borrow some tools. I had to buy some other tools. And I stood in the parking lot, and I replaced the alternator in our Jeep. And it took me about an hour and a half or so. But the light didn't go off, and that was bothering me. Like, on the little dashboard, again, check engine light, always on. That's just how I'm used to that. If it's off, I know there might really be a problem, okay? But the battery light's on, and that just bothered me. And so I actually left AutoZone with my new alternator and everything, but that light was still on. And so I actually turned around and went back, and I'm like, "I think something's still wrong, right? Is there any other thing?" And that's when they told me, they're like, "Well, we've sold a bunch of those alternators. Like, out of the last 20 that we've sold, I think 6 of them have just been duds, like they've been dead." And I'm like, "You couldn't have told me that before I put this thing in, you know?" And they have an alternator tester in the store. I'm like, "You couldn't have tested it before I put it in?" But they're like getting ready to close, and so I'm like, okay. So I call around. I found another auto parts store, and I drove over there in town, and I bought. They had one more of these alternators left, so I bought one of those, and just to have with me in case I'm on the inside, you know, the interstate. I'm like, you know, need to replace that. But while I had the engine open, I noticed that I was missing one little wire that wasn't plugged in to the alternator that I installed. Just one little one. And I closed it, and then the light went off, and I was like, "Oh, I'm feeling good." And I got my extra alternator, and I got everything I need. But that whole ordeal, it was like a 4-hour thing. And it was hot. It was like 100 degrees out. And it was uncomfortable, and it was annoying, and it was frustrating. And my wife, and Kate, she's walking around on the phone, talking to her little friends, you know, and they're laughing. I could hear her laughing across the parking lot, and I'm like, "Ugh," as I'm busting my knuckles, you know, trying to get these bolts undone. It's just, you know, all of that. And everything seemed to be going wrong. Like, I just couldn't figure it out. But fixing it was the only way forward, right? I mean, I had no other options. And so I put in the work, and I fixed it, and I was able to move forward. That's how it is in our relationships. See, most of the times when something goes wrong, because it will, it's life. Our fixing our relationships and fixing our friendships, man, it all boils down to it's work. It's work. And it's uncomfortable work. And it's a pain. And it's annoying. And it's frustrating. And it's against our pride. It's against every bone in our body. And sometimes it feels like we're going nowhere. And sometimes we feel like we've fixed it. And then all of a sudden there's an underlying issue that we don't know about that we rediscover later. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. It's just problem after problem after problem. But as a Christian, it's like Jesus is saying, it's like a requirement, not to get to heaven or anything, but he's saying, this is just what Christians do. He's saying, we view relationships as Jesus viewed relationships. And it always begins with us, regardless of who started it, regardless of who they are, regardless of what they've done. See, God wants you to make relationships and friendships right in your life. And so my question for you this morning is, for you, who is it? Who is it? We all got them. Who is it in your life that if you just look at it, I mean, you're just honest with yourself. You're like, man, this relationship is broke. You might even live with the person. That you need to take the lead and you need to make right. See, some of you guys, I don't think it's hard for you to think of that person. Right? Relationship is broken, and he's saying you need to take the lead in making that right. Others of us, I think, you know, it's like we could think of several people. We're like, I don't know where to start. You know, well, pick one or two. Let's start with those. See, some of us, this afternoon, we need to send a text, or we need to make a call, and we need to start repairing those relationships. We need to take the lead on repairing those relationships that are broke, whether it's our fault or not, because that's what Jesus did with us. See, we're to have the mindset that Jesus had, the mindset of humility, viewing others as more important than ourselves. We're to look out for their interests rather than our interests, meaning we root for them. We're to be taking the lead to fix things, and we're to go after that friendship that has wandered off. And we're to do everything that we can do, removing the obstacles to restoring that relationship in our life. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. This stuff is hard and complicated, and it's against everything that we are. When we start talking pride and humility, I mean everything in our life, everything that we do, for most of us, every decision that we make, it's all about us. But you have called us not to live that way. You've called us to put others' interests above our own. We are last. We are to choose it that way. God, the only way we're able to do this is we need your help. And so we ask for it today. Those of us who need to make that text or make that call or talk to that person face to face, God, we ask that you would give us the boldness to take the lead on making that happen and to forgive where we need to forgive. But God, you've called us to do it. And so we need to. Lord, we thank you for all this, and we ask this in your name. Amen.